Hello, welcome back. I am speaking now with Craig Barnes of We Are People Here and Nico Lichen on public banking alternatives. Welcome to the Radio Cafe, Craig Barnes and Nico Lichen.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Great to be here.
So it seems that public banking is a new national conversation. Can you talk about what it means to advocate for public banking?
You betcha. There's a turmoil going on in the banking system we've got. There's been a kind of a collapse of effectiveness of the Federal Reserve, a collapse of the effectiveness of the Congress, the presidency. Everything's grinding to a halt. And what we've come to understand is that whoever controls the money supply really controls the health of the economy of the country, and the Wall Street banks, the four or five Wall Street banks, control the money supply. And they're not doing it. They're not getting business going in Santa Fe. They're not getting business going in the county. They're not getting business going anywhere in the country. So that public banking is a completely different alternative. That's banking where the currency is issued, or the money is issued by a public bank, so that a bank that's owned by the public. So a bank that could be owned by the city of Santa Fe, for example, could put Santa Fe's $200 million in reserves, not in Wells Fargo, but in a bank, a local bank, which could invest its interest returns in public policy projects in Santa Fe. So the idea is, as you say, it is spreading across the country. There are multiple parties now working on it, thinking about it, talking about it all over the country.
So, Nico, can we go a little bit more into the how of this? You say the $200 million reserves. What would the city of Santa Fe have to do, and what would this bank exactly look like?
Well, it's not just the city of Santa Fe. It could also be tribal governments. It could be the county. Brian Egolf has introduced legislation for a state-owned bank of New Mexico. So it's any publicly owned entity that could establish a bank to serve the people of their region or their district or their constituents. So what they'd have to do would be to get a charter. You set up a policy board, you hire a good banker, and then you begin to invest and leverage assets, things that governments take in the form of taxes and fees and assessments, to benefit the constituency.
So a lot of people refer to the difference between private banking is that it's really seeking short-term profits. I mean, they have to appeal to the shareholders, whereas a public bank would be in the public interest, I mean, under the best circumstances, correct? So we would consider whatever the public needs as opposed to just looking at the bottom line. So this is what the state would have to be doing, pretty much responding, or the city, responding to constituent interests.
Right. It's how the charter is written and how the purpose of the bank is set up. So it's important to do that right at the beginning.
So what was the response to EGOLF's proposal?
Well, the legislation needs more education throughout the state, and We Are People Here feel that maybe the best place for us to begin is locally, where people know us best and people understand the local challenges that we're experiencing because of the way banking has not served the public interest.
There's a recurring theme in American history. Probably no theme other than slavery has played such a central role in American history, as the public versus the big banks or a central bank, beginning with Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, Andrew Jackson, Abraham Lincoln, all the way down to the present. The issue of who controls the money supply has been a dominant one, and in the last 30 years we've kind of forgotten it. But here it is now, when the economy is collapsing and the economy is not putting people to work, and the big banks are making record profits. Somebody has to, and the bonuses that the big bank CEOs are getting are just off the charts, obscene. And you have to say, wait a minute, this isn't actually a new movement in 2013. This is a movement that's been going on since the founding of the Republic. And what we are doing is getting in touch again with the reasons why it's been going on for so long, and understanding that if the money money and credit are actually a public utility. It shouldn't be controlled by banks. It should be controlled by the public. The kings and Caesars used to issue the money because it belonged to the state. It doesn't belong to Wells Fargo and Citibank. It belongs to the, it's part of the duties of government to provide money where it's needed in order to get, this morning's paper says that there are two Head Start programs closing down in New Mexico. Why is that happening? You know, the banks are walking away with record profits, and we're closing that Head Start because the federal government can't pay for it. federal government or the state government or the city government was using the interest on lending to do public policy projects, you could begin to fill up the potholes, you could begin to build the bridges you need, you could begin to finance the schools you want here in Santa Fe, Santa Fe County, the state of Mexico. All of that is possible if you control the money supply, and a public bank can do that.
And it's probably really coming up in conversations because everything has gotten so extreme. I mean, environmental, climate disruption, like you say, this concentration of wealth and power, the CEO is getting, I mean, it's just astronomical, the amount of money they're getting that could probably run every Head Start in
That's
New Mexico
right, yeah.
for several years, right?
Exactly that. And there is a way in which this cycle has been repeated often. This cycle of the concentration of wealth, this inequality, was exaggerated in the late 1890s, and then there was a collapse. It's exaggerated in 2008, and then there was a collapse. And what we have to do is, we're part of this conversation. People say, why are you talking about banking? I mean, good God, why aren't you talking about the school? Why aren't you talking about the climate change? Well, all of that actually traces back to, can you put people to work in an appropriate way? Can you serve public policy when the forests are burning? Can you spend some way to do conservation instead of exploitation? And all of that means that you have to get control of who makes the loans.
And I love the fact that public banking was first introduced in America by the Quakers. Those Quakers are wonderful. What would we do without the Quakers in the original colony of Pennsylvania? But there is a state now that uses public banking. Can we talk about North Dakota?
You betcha. Nicole and I both are steeped in North Dakota. North Dakota got a public bank in 1919. Nicole, why don't you go ahead and talk about that?
Well, it came about primarily because the farmers were being controlled and basically starved out by the big banks, by the railroads. And they fought and finally were successful in getting state bank legislation passed and getting it established. But really, it wasn't until 10 years later when the conservatives came into office that they realized what a good deal it could be for the state of North Dakota. And that's when it really started to turn a profit and be successful. And the Bank of North Dakota has turned a profit for the state for the last 40 years, long before the oil boom ever started. And they're the only state that went through the whole recession with no red ink and kept turning a profit. They have helped their constituents out when there have been flooding. They finance college for students. They do homes for farmers in rural areas. But, you know, it's a closed loop. It's an economy of scale. That's how I think of it. And we're realizing this on a lot of levels, that the scale at which we're doing things is not within our control. The food, the environment. And so they're able to make loans and invest in small businesses and in the community and in services because they know the people they're serving.
Well,
it's that good faith and credit in the people that matters so much. But there's another public bank, or there's actually three of them in Oklahoma. Those are tribally owned. One of them is Bank 2. And there's an example of a federally owned public bank, and maybe some people that are older will remember the United States Postal Service and Bank and Savings. And there is look at reviving that now at this time as well.
What happened to that? Why did these close down?
It hasn't closed down. It's still vestigial, and it's possible to revive it. I don't know that much about it. Maybe it's because the big banks came on or banks were more accessible. But at one time, the post office was also part of the Commonwealth. It also was really at the heart of the community. And so it was accessible to everybody, and people could save their money there.
You know, about in North Dakota, I was reading some figures on there. In the spring of 2010, it was not only the only state with a major budget surplus, it had the lowest unemployment default rates in the country. and the most community banks per capita. So, I mean, there's so many reasons why this can be really positive. And can you talk a little bit more about the floods that happened there? Because this is a very immediate thing, especially with climate crises and with things happening, how states can actually respond to their local communities in the face of tragedies. The flood, I believe, was in April
1997? Mm-hmm. It's a great metaphor, actually, because the State Bank of North Dakota, when Grand Forks was in North Dakota, was flooded on both sides of the river. On both sides of the river, of course, one side was in North Dakota, one side was in Minnesota. And on the North Dakota side, today you go up there and the community is rebuilt. On the Minnesota side, the community is still run down, ramshackle, because the banks have, as you can imagine, the private banks have, damn, this place is run down and the paint's fallen off and it's been destroyed by flood. This is not a good place to invest. Bank of North Dakota on its side of the river said, we have a public purpose to serve here. And we're going to help recreate the businesses and the homes in this community, and have done so. So if you go there now, it's Grand Forks, North Dakota. It's a bustling, burgeoning community. You go across the river, and it's looking like it's run down and dilapidated. So that's a thing that there's a different underlying theme in a publicly owned bank. And that theme is we're here to serve the public and not just shareholders. And when we make profit as a bank, still operating as a bank, when we make profit, we run that profit back into the local economy rather than out to Wall Street and out to the global exchange. And that makes a huge difference. So that in North Dakota, during the depression times in the 1930s, when farmers were going under, they owed the public bank money. But the public bank didn't do what Wells Fargo and the Citibank and the big banks of Minneapolis and Chicago at that time did. But the North Dakota bank said, okay, boys, stay on the farm. Pay us rent. We'll accumulate the amount you owe. You owe a lot. You stay on the farm, keep the farm working, and when the rains come and the depression is over, we'll, by golly, put you back into the business and you can pay us off. And that's exactly what happened. So in 1940, those farmers were still on the farm. The land hadn't been repossessed by big banks, hadn't been sold out for development by big banks. And the farmers stayed on the land and got their farms back, paid them off. And that kept the whole of North Dakota in a better position than it ever been.
Amazing. I'm speaking today with Craig Barnes and Nico Lycan of We Are People Here about public banking alternatives. Can you discuss the difference between a public bank and a community bank, if there's a difference? Because I believe we have community banks here in Santa Fe.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Absolutely. A community bank is an essential part of the system. A local bank, the local community banks here in the Santa Fe area, for example, the Los Alamos National Bank, or the credit unions, those are an essential part of the system. And what a public bank could do, or a state bank, or a city bank, county bank, it could reinforce the lending of the local banks. So it doesn't replace them, it supports them. And that's what's happened in North Dakota. So if there are difficult loans for a North Dakota community bank to do, the public bank will say, okay, we'll take half of it. We'll guarantee half of that loan, or we'll support half of that loan. And that's what could happen here.
So and that's similar to what Representative Eagle's legislation was. So it actually supports community banks throughout the state.
And so what are some of the fears around this? I mean, I know that there are some misconceptions, and maybe I can go through some of them if you can address them, about public banking being much riskier than the current system.
Really? I don't know how anyone could say that after what we've been through.
Well, it's amazing, but these are some of the misconceptions I've come across. Public banks compete with private banks. You addressed that a little. Public banks are already providing the services that public banks would replicate. And that the government, being in the banking business, is both inefficient and a potential source for mischief caused by politicians. So these are some of the main ones. Oh, also the return on the state's investment with public banks would not be significantly better than the return on investments which the state is currently receiving with private banks. So five main misconceptions that seem to be floating out in the
Okay, well,
Google
let's just take them one by one.
So the first is that public banking would be riskier than the current system.
It's not actually, because you're investing in people that you know. And the rate of return is smaller, and you're partnering with people that you know. You know that all the investments basically, now a public bank is typically a banker's bank. It's not a bank like you or I would put our money into. We would continue to put our money in community banks. But the county or the city or the state or a tribal entity would invest their assets in a public bank. So they're self-insured. We don't run the risk of dealing with FDIC and having FDIC go broke and raiding the banks like they did recently.
All these bailouts.
And when you think of the riskiness, what could have been riskier than the 2007-2008 collapse?
Absolutely.
Of Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers and the realization now that the five global banks that are in Wall Street have 58% assets worth 58% of the GDP of the country. Too big to fail means you can't. They could fail, but if they did, the whole country goes down. And that's what happened in 2008. That's
so the government necessarily has to step in and bail them out. Now, could the same
exactly
be said
what happened in 2008 because they were risky. They were so risky that they jeopardized the whole country. Well, if a state bank has a bad loan, it's not going to jeopardize the whole country.
They were also risky and irresponsible. I mean, the two don't necessarily need to be synonymous, but in that case,
And one of the ways in which they're especially risky is they took loans and repackaged them and divided them up in these collateralized debt obligations and derivatives that were terribly unfounded. So as Nicole says, they didn't know on Wall Street when they packaged these hundreds and hundreds of loans in new instruments. They didn't know what farmer was going to pay that loan off or what householder was going to pay that loan off. And in banking, if you don't know who's responsible for the loan, you're in deep trouble. And then what they did, because they didn't know what the chain of title was to fabricate and fraudulently make up the documents in the chain of title. That's risky.
And I would say again, irresponsible.
And irresponsible.
Right.
So
the second
illegal.
And illegal, exactly. Yeah. Well, that's a different conversation, isn't it?
Yes,
the legality. Public banks competing with private banks.
The vision is that they actually in North Dakota, there's a good number of privately owned banks that collaborate with the Bank of North Dakota, and that would be the vision that we would have in New Mexico, that they could rely on the state of New Mexico for matching funds to enable loans to businesses, to homeowners, and it would reduce the risk to the community banks as well as investing within the community.
Great. The third, that private banks are already providing the services that public banks would replicate.
They would, private banks would then have a less risky income stream to count on if they got matching funds from the state of New Mexico, and they wouldn't be so much under the pressure of the big banks. We've all heard about community banks that are folding, and that's not an accident. Some of that has to do with who they're getting their money from.
Well, and I would also say that private banks aren't actually providing the service. Yes. I mean, anybody who's tried to take out a loan knows how incredibly difficult it is.
Or anybody who's tried to renegotiate a foreclosure. Mm-hmm. They're going through 3, 4, or 5 reapplications, and the applications are being paid for by the federal government that says you got to sponsor reapplication or modification of your loan. The banks are making money on requiring you to do it again and again and again, so that we have people that are working with We Are People here, our organization, where they have been forced by the big banks. They've never gotten their foreclosure modified. They haven't had their principal amount modified. A public bank could do that. We could say, okay, you're underwater. Let's modify the principal that you owe and keep you in the house, keep you so that the house doesn't fall into ruin, and keep the house from becoming a predator, a target by the big banks that want to say, and they're saying now, buy up all these houses, hold on to them, and we'll take the profits that come from these houses. A public bank can keep you in your house, can negotiate with you just as they did the farmers in North Dakota.
And it's foreclosure. I mean, this is such a big topic. Just a side note here, I am hoping to do a whole show on this next Thursday on foreclosure specifically with some attorneys dealing with people, because the speak of criminality, it's just extraordinary what is happening and how many people are losing their homes here in New Mexico. You all are also giving a talk about that late September, September 24th, correct, about foreclosure specifically?
We're going to have a whole program, Zelly, on September 24th with people who are in foreclosure and with people who have been finding ways to fight foreclosure in the court. some rather unorthodox ways, but entirely legally based ways to fight foreclosure that have not been on the table, using parts of the Uniform Commercial Code and other ways to approach it that I didn't learn about in law school that are coming up now that are being useful for people in foreclosure. So that September 24th meeting is going to cover ways to fight back, ways the people can get into court to support the individual who feels ashamed and alone. We can do that together, and we can create an organization of people who are in foreclosure. And we're going to start talking about that on the 24th.
Well, and I definitely want to continue the misperceptions, but also there's one talk July 23rd. It's a town hall about public banking. Basically, you two will be discussing this conference that you attended in San Rafael. Mm-hmm. On September 8th, you will be giving a presentation at Journey Santa Fe. So if anybody can't make the 24th or July 23rd, please note all these down, and hopefully it will be on your website as well.
Thank you, Zelle.
Yes, it
yes.
will.
Yes.
And that website would be?
WeArePeopleHere.org.
Great, great. Mm-hmm. So one more misconception here. The government being in the banking business is both inefficient and a source for mischief caused by our politicians. Not that our politicians would do any mischief, but this is a...
The one thing that's great about having a government be responsible for banking is sunshine laws and the capacity for transparency. And yep, we have mischievous politicians, but they can be caught and brought to justice a lot easier than some of the mischief makers in big banks. You know, that's the main piece about that, I think.
And the inefficiency. I mean, the government shouldn't necessarily be in the banking business.
The government is to represent the people. The government is to represent the people. And it's our commonwealth. It's our common utility.
The history is, in fact, that public banks are much more efficient than the private banks. They don't have to address all their interest returns and their lending returns to shareholders. They can put them into the efficiency of the lending operation itself. So that that statement that public banks are not as effective or efficient is just a throwaway propaganda statement. In fact, public banks, the banking amounts to lending, keeping a good account of it, and not lending bad loans. That can be done by people in government as well as by people who are running Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers.
Absolutely.
And collapsing. So.
And the CEO doesn't make big bucks either. They earn a salary just like any other governmental entity.
Well, this is an important conversation. I hope New Mexico will embrace it. We're speaking with Craig Barnes and Nico Lycan of We Are People Here, July 23rd, September 28th. At Journey Santa Fe. You have been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Zaylee, sitting in for Mary Charlotte.